from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway filed an attention-catching lawsuit at the end of last week. She wants to bar certain immigrants from being counted by the U.S. Census Bureau. If this topic sounds familiar, it's because it was litigated near the end of President Donald Trump's first term. Lower court judges ended up rejecting Trump's efforts to bar some immigrants from the census, pointing to language in the U.S. Constitution that requires the federal government to count persons. But since the U.S. Supreme Court never made a final determination in the case, Hanaway is hoping her office's arguments could find favor with the high court and fundamentally alter congressional redistricting and how much money flows to states. Joining us now from Jefferson City to talk about this case, as well as some other legal matters her office is involved with at the moment, is Catherine Hanaway. The GOP official has served as Attorney General since 2025 and previously served as a U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri and Speaker of the Missouri House. Madam Attorney General, welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
It's so good to be with you again, Jason. Thanks very much for having me.
Why did you decide to pursue this lawsuit over which type of people count in a census?
Well, it fundamentally for me was that I wanted to stand up for Missouri's fair share. As the state's attorney general, I see it as my duty to protect the people of Missouri in any way I can, because people who are not qualified to be counted in the census are currently counted in the census. Missouri gets less than its fair share of representation in Congress, in the Electoral College, and in the drawdown of federal funds. So to me, this is just a case about fundamental fairness.
Some people may see the topic of this being very national in scope, and they may be like, I thought Catherine Hanaway was going to be different from Andrew Bailey and Josh Hawley and Eric Schmidt by not pursuing these splashy, attention-grabbing lawsuits as much. What would you say to those people who would level that criticism at you?
Well, I mean, I don't know why they speculated in any particular direction, and I don't want to speak for people who speculated. What I can tell you is that my motivation here was to stand up for Missourians. And I'll just give the example that in Missouri, we have somewhere between 60 and 80,000 illegal immigrants. It doesn't really have an impact on our overall population. The city of Los Angeles has 2 million illegal immigrants. Effectively, when you count them in the census, that gives California two additional congressional seats. If you didn't count illegal immigrants, Missouri would stand to gain at least one seat and millions of dollars in federal funding. So I really do think I took an oath to stand up for what's best for Missouri, and that's what I'm doing.
Now, in the introduction, I mentioned that the lawsuit seeks to not count certain immigrants, and I was very careful with my wording there because from reading this lawsuit, this would not include people with lawful permanent resident documentation, or that's the term used for green card. And it would likely not include people who have adjudicated asylum claims. I want to make sure that's correct before I ask the next question.
Well, so I really can't answer the adjudicated asylum claim question. What I can tell you is that when we looked at the law, it seemed very clear that the law says that the people who should be counted for the purposes of the census are anyone who's a citizen and anyone who has the permanent legal right to be in the United States. So not temporary visa holders, not travelers, not people here on business, not people here illegally, but the holders of green cards do have a right to permanently stay in the United States legally. So on the adjudicated asylum claims, I'm not sure which category they fall into.
So based on what you said, though, you're not just trying to exclude immigrants who are without legal status, who came over the border and didn't have any documentation. You're also trying to exclude people who are on temporary work visas or temporary student visas. Is that accurate? And would that make this more broad than just targeting immigrants without legal status?
Well, I mean, yes, absolutely. Anyone who doesn't have the right to be in the United States on a permanent basis would not be counted. It is somewhat more broad than illegal immigrants, but the bulk of who would be covered by this is illegal immigrants. And the people who are here on temporary visas obviously are still citizens of their own countries and probably counted in their census. And so we don't want to apportion congressional seats, electoral votes, and federal funds to account for those people.
Your lawsuit claims that because immigrants without legal status are counted in the census, states like New York and California benefit with additional congressional representation. But through just a cursory Google search, Texas and Florida have much larger populations of immigrants without legal status than New York. In fact, California only edges Texas by about 200,000 people. So isn't it fair to say that this could end up affecting quote-unquote red states as much as blue states that you're emphasizing, like California and New York?
Yeah, and in our lawsuit, we include a map of the entire United States and show the impact on Texas and Florida. We're not just focused on any one state. I think generally, as I refer to it, that the coastal states, to include Texas and Florida, lose congressional seats. The Midwest and the near South pick up some seats. And yeah, it's not a red state, blue state thing. It's a fairness for Missouri thing.
I want to talk about just the ability to quantify how many people either are in states without legal status or have temporary work and student visas. Now, the second category should be easy to quantify because they have documentation with the federal government. But it seems hard to believe that somebody who is in the country without legal status would fill out a form to the federal government, to the census, as much as people who are here legally. So when you say that like Missouri would gain a seat or that California and New York would lose a seat, and even with me, with those estimates I just mentioned, they're all just estimates. So how can you say for sure that this is going to affect one state or another? And I guess I'm asking this question realizing that it's contradicting my prior question that seems to be very sure about the count, but I guess that's holding myself accountable as well.
You're right that they are estimates by and large at this point, but what we, you know, can see in prior census data is the population of the United States growing at a pace far greater than the rate of birth, and that the people who make these estimates, and there's, you know, experts at the Census Bureau, there's experts in academia. There seems to be quite a bit of consensus about the number of illegal immigrants and where they're located.
We mentioned congressional representation a few times, but the other aspect of this lawsuit that is really important is around federal money, since states usually get a certain amount of funds based off their population. But if immigrants without legal status and also temporary visa holders, they still use the roads, they still go to hospitals, they still need to be protected by police, why should states get less money when that money could help pay for those types of services that end up keeping everybody safe, not just people who are specific types of immigrants or citizens?
So that is a great question, Jason, because it really gets to the crux of the matter. The states that have had sanctuary provisions have made the decision to let in far more people than Missouri. And if those states want to have those policies, then they should be providing for the additional costs of having those people in their states. But the states that haven't had those policies, the states like Missouri that have complied with the law, shouldn't be punished because we ignored the law. And that's what's happening right now. We're rewarding states for ignoring the law, for creating sanctuaries to let illegal immigrants into the country. It's just wrong, and it's not fair to the states who are law-abiding.
Do you think this could have a negative impact on Missouri's university towns, specifically places like Columbia, Maryville, Cape Girardeau, Kirksville, where there are a lot of students there who may be here on temporary student visas, but wouldn't be counted if your lawsuit is successful?
Do I mean that there, if your question is, could some money shift around in terms of allocations on an intrastate basis?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm
Possibly.
asking. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, possibly it could cause some shift. I just don't think that the numbers are large enough in terms of our 6.2 million people in the state to have a dramatic impact.
We are talking with Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway about her lawsuit that seeks to exclude certain types of immigrants from the census. So, at least one person, Washington University law professor Travis Crum, told St. Louis Public Radio that you may have an uphill battle because of the text of the U.S. Constitution.
And the reason is that the Section 2 of the 14th Amendment mandates the counting of whole numbers of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed. And that language has historically meant if you have inhabitants, people who are domiciled there, and the census only counts people who are domiciled somewhere. And so, sort of looking back at how this has been done for decades, they have not excluded undocumented immigrants from the past several censuses. And I don't think that a court decision is going to do so here.
That was Washington University School of Law professor Travis Crum explaining why he does not expect courts to exclude certain immigrants from the census. Madam Attorney General, why is the professor wrong?
Well, I think he actually answered that question for you in his answer, which is that you are only supposed to count people who are domiciled, which is what the law says in terms of case law that has later interpreted what that section of the Constitution means. And I really think that people need to be aware of what a new phenomenon this is. And I mean new in the sense of the whole history of our country. Jimmy Carter was the first one to count illegal immigrants in the census. It wasn't even an issue prior to that. And he made an affirmative decision to do that. President Trump tried to reverse that during his first term. President Biden re-reversed it. I'm oversimplifying a little bit of what happened at that point, but that was the net effect. And so we're saying, like, let's get a decision on this once and for all. As you pointed out, the U.S. Supreme Court has yet to render an opinion on this issue.
Yes, and that is why this lawsuit is, I think, pretty relevant and why people should pay attention to it. But kind of on the flip side, this has been brought up before. And in 2020, I believe a panel of lower court judges ruled against the Trump administration on this issue. Why do you think the courts would rule differently this time around?
Well, if, as we've seen, and this is how cases typically get to the United States Supreme Court, different circuit courts of appeals and therefore different judges come to different conclusions. And it's usually when there's a split in the circuits that something goes up to the United States Supreme Court. This is a very different case procedurally because you have one district court judge who's randomly assigned. And then the circuit court judge appoints a circuit court judge and another district court judge, so a panel of three, will hear this, and then it's a direct appeal to the United States Supreme Court. So I think the chances are pretty good that we're going to get to the United States Supreme Court. I know if we lose, we're certain to appeal, and I'm pretty sure if the other side loses, they're certain to appeal. So the reason that the case that you're talking about from the first Trump administration didn't get to the court was that the parties settled the case. So we'll see what happens next.
Why do you think the Supreme Court would find some favor in your arguments? And why do you think that they would even hear it? Because, like, they don't have to hear this lawsuit if they don't want to.
No, but it's just the very recent, like, almost contemporary history. I don't know. Can you say that as an oxymoron, contemporary history? But they
yes,
have
but I'm going to allow it. Keep going.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So right now they have pending a case on the Voting Rights Act to determine whether or not there should be majority-minority districts, and a case on birthright citizenship. So all of these cases go to the fundamental issue of how should we assign congressional districts. So it's clearly a topic they're very interested in at the moment.
Your lawsuit asked for a redo of the 2020 census, and St. Louis University demography and sociology professor Ness Sandoval says from a practical standpoint, that may be very difficult to pull off.
There are hundreds of thousands of people who are there are hundreds of thousands of people who are dead today that were alive when the census was done. You have babies who are born today that were not born in the 2020 census. How are you going to deal with this growth and decline of population over the past 6 years?
That was St. Louis University's Ness Sandoval on why redoing the 2020 census, which is asked for in Attorney General Hanaway's lawsuit, may be impractical. Madam Attorney General, I know you are also asking for changes to be done prospectively in the 2030 census, but why ask for a redo if it's going to be practically very difficult to actually pull that off?
Well, there are lots of things that are complex and practically very difficult. Professor Sandoval regularly does an excellent presentation on the changing demographics of the St. Louis region. He relies on some census data, but he makes other projections not based on census data. And it is possible to do it. So the reason we want to redo the 2020 census is we want to get relief as soon as we can so that Missouri doesn't continue to be underrepresented in the Congress, underrepresented in the Electoral College, and not get its fair share of federal dollars. The state budget is very tight this year. Hundreds of millions of dollars could make a real difference. And, you know, it's every federal program that you can think of where we're not getting our fair share.
Wouldn't it cost a lot of money to redo the census? I'm getting word that it costs $14 billion to do the 2020 census. So is a redo worth it when the next census is going to be done, I don't know, 2 years after this case likely concludes?
Well, I think whether, in fact, the court grants us this relief will depend a lot on when the case gets decided. The if this case gets decided in 2029, which is only 3 years away, and it wouldn't be unusual for it to take 3 years for a case to get to the Supreme Court, it's pretty doubtful that the court would grant us this relief. If the court is very interested and puts this on a rocket docket and it gets decided this year, yeah, I think it'd be fundamentally unfair for us to have to go through another congressional election cycle, two more election cycles, underrepresented as a state, and, you know, three or four more budget cycles. So it's my job to fight hard. I'm going to fight hard. Sometimes your reach exceeds your grasp, but you got to go for it sometimes.
Staying on the topic of redistricting, next week could mark the beginning of one of the most important cases over the new congressional map lawmakers approved last year. The ACLU of Missouri is arguing that the new map that is effectively frozen after a group called People Not Politicians submitted signatures to place the measure up for a referendum. Your office says the new map is in effect at this very moment. Why is the ACLU of Missouri wrong here?
Well, they're wrong because we have a court order that says they're wrong from the Eastern District of Missouri, but they're also just like wrong on the fact that what the law says is that the referendum as proposed becomes the status quo when sufficient valid signatures have been submitted. But knowing that they're sufficient and valid only happens after the Secretary of State's office certifies those signatures. Until that time, whatever the new law is what governs.
There is Missouri Supreme Court precedent, though, that says the submission of signatures causes a targeted law not to go into effect. Why wouldn't that precedent matter in this situation?
Sufficient valid legal signatures. It is not directly on point in this situation, and that was a statute that wouldn't necessarily have had an immediate effect, whereas this is congressional districts that are relevant to the elections that are about to be held. I mean, we're filing's just about to open.
Yeah, and I'll have a question about filing at the end, but I think the reason why I'm really confused about this is I was around in 2017 when the opponents of Right to Work submitted a lot of signatures to Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft, and there has not been a single millisecond in the history of Missouri when Right to Work was in effect, because as soon as those signatures were turned in, Secretary of State Ashcroft said Right to Work is frozen, and no one ever challenged that. So, again, I'm just a little bit confused what the difference between those two situations are, because that situation was only 9 years ago. This wasn't 50 years ago. So what say you on that point?
Jay Ashcroft was wrong.
Okay. Why was he? Oh, I guess he's wrong because of the reasons you just mentioned, correct?
Yeah, I mean, here's why he was wrong, is because if you do not interpret it as being sufficient valid signatures, people could show up at the Secretary of State's office with literally anything, boxes of paper, and say, we have submitted our signatures. The law should be frozen as the old law. And that's just not what the law says, what the cases say, and it's not the right thing. People have a right to petition for a referendum, but there are requirements on what those signatures need to look like. And so at the point when sufficient valid signatures have been certified by the Secretary of State's office, that's the moment at which it becomes frozen.
I mentioned this is important, and I think it's important for our listeners to understand why I think that way. Secretary of State Denny Hoskins told me he won't decide on whether the referendum has made the ballot due to sufficient signatures until August. And if the map froze in early December and Hoskins sticks to that timeline, I cannot imagine any scenario, even if he rejects the referendum in August, where the new districts would go into effect because of U.S. Supreme Court precedent around not changing districts close to an election. So is my feel on why this potential decision is important, like, are my instincts correct here on this is a really important question to answer, especially since filing starts later this month, actually?
Yeah, it is an important question. You're absolutely right. That case you're referring to is the Purcell case, which basically says that election authorities shouldn't interfere with elections when you're getting very close to the time for filing, for campaigning, and for the election itself. And so which districts are in effect has a great deal of bearing on which ones are in effect now and for the next several months will probably be determinative of which ones are used for the actual election.
So the other major case on the horizon is one on whether redistricting in the middle of the decade is allowed under the Missouri Constitution. Your office already got a win on this case. Cole County Judge Christopher Limbaugh wrote, "In these situations, Missouri courts have consistently held that the legislature has the power to act unless expressly prohibited. Given the fact that the Constitution contains no restrictive language, this court concludes that the legislature had the power to enact the new map." This case will be argued before the Supreme Court on March 10th. What are your expectations for what the Supreme Court will do here? Because on the one hand, like, this has never been litigated before, so I have no idea what they're going to do. But on the other hand, even though the Missouri Supreme Court has five judges that were appointed by Republicans, they're often pretty unpredictable on how they decide things and often make Republicans like yourself cranky and mad. How are you feeling going into that case with that backdrop?
Well, I never feel cranky. I am a cheerful warrior, I hope. And I like this battle. If you look at Judge Limbaugh's order, it's very clear. I think our chances with the court are very good. Even though it is a case of first impression with them, the Constitution is pretty clear that the legislature has an obligation to redistrict every decade, but it doesn't have a limitation on how often they can do it. So cheerfully, we'll go to the court.
Catherine Hanaway is Missouri's Attorney General. She was appointed to the post in 2025 and previously served as the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri and as Speaker of the Missouri House. Madam Attorney General, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Jason. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about our cases.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.